Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, proud supporter of live music and driven to think big about beer since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Think big about beer.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot. He's Jim DeRogatis. And this week we're going to assist a listener who's looking for some musical help. We're going to talk to a mom who's got some issues with toxic masculinity, as she says. She's trying to empower her young son who wants to avoid that syndrome.
But still listen to good music. That's coming up later in the show. First, a topic rife with toxic attitudes, diss tracks.
Stand, stand, son, listen, man, dad isn't mad, but how you gonna name yourself after a mad gun and have a man bun?
So, Greg, this week we thought we would play our favorite diss tracks, not only in hip-hop, which is an art form that's rife with them. We have Machine Gun Kelly and Eminem feuding right now. Of course, we had Pusha T and Drake. It's been there from the beginning, and it goes back to trading the dozens, right? I'm gonna insult you.
Schoolyard taunts.
Your mother's so big, yeah. When she sits around the house, right? All that nonsense.
Exactly. And hip-hop ran with it. They took that tradition from the schoolyards into music, and the trading of insults was a core element in how an MC would get discovered in the early days. You know, you would have these battle raps between MCs, and the guy who got in the best disses, yeah, was often anointed the winner and was the guy with the career in his future.
So this idea of disrespecting someone, ideally with humor, I think that's how it works best, is not confined to hip-hop. We're going to go right back to the beginning, in fact. I think this is one of popular music's first and most famous diss tracks. 1962, Joe Tex gets into it with James Brown. Joe Tex was an R&B singer, a really good one, who was, not surprisingly, born and raised in Texas. His real name was Joseph Arrington. And he and James Brown got into it, and it lasted for years. They were both on the same label, Detroit's Anna Records, for a period in the mid-50s. Apparently, Brown recorded a tune that Tex had first popularized. Brown had more success with it, changed it around some. Then Brown said, if you got a problem with that, I challenge you to a duel, you know, a musical duel. And then Joe Tex divorced his first wife, who wound up with James Brown. And Brown, rather cheekily, sends Tex a letter and says, when the relationships ended, when the musical collaboration with that woman ended, you can have her back now. So Joe Tex writes a song in 1962 called You Keeper. And he calls Brown out by name. And, you know, Brown's an intimidating figure, right? James, I got your letter. Came to me today. You said I could have my baby back, but I don't want her that way. You keep her, right? This went on for years afterwards. There were other tracks in this musical diss feud. Joe Tex would come out on stage on occasion in a ratty old cape and roll around on the floor as if he was having a seizure. Because, of course, that was, you know, the cape was part of Brown's shtick, right? But, you know, who's remembered in posterity? I really, you know, obviously James Brown is a legend, you know, the godfather of soul. Joe even had a problem with that nickname, said, you ain't the godfather of soul. Oh, anyway, Joe Tex is remembered for this song. There were other accomplishments in his life. But here it is, You Keeper, Joe Tex on Sound Opinions.
James, I got your letter. It came to me today. You said I could have my baby back, but I don't want her that way. So you keep her, because man, she belongs to you. She didn't make up her own mind to come on home to me. So I found me someone else, and we're happy as can be. So you keep her, because now she belongs to you. But you can tell I said hello, James, and remember to always be a lady. 'Cause you see, when she was with me, James, I taught her that a lady stays in a lady's place. And I was the one who taught her. Ask her, didn't I teach her how to make up her face? I taught her how to pick the clothes. and the jewelry to wear. And I was the one who taught her how to style her hair. My, 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 she left me after I taught her these things.
Now she didn't. That is You Keeper, Joe Tags, man. He doesn't want his wife back. And he says later in the song, you know, I found happiness with somebody else. It's okay.
I appreciate guys who name names when they dish out their insults, you know?
James. That was the first word in the song. James, I'm
not
talking to you.
Not only is this between you and me, brother, but the whole world is going to hear about it now.
There you go.
And I got a hit out of it as well. You know, I want to go to an artist who basically made a career out of dissing people in music. But very, as you said, humor is a big part of this. And the humor in Mojo Nixon's music has always been a key element. The psychobilly artist, Mojo Nixon, he was with another artist named Skid Roper in a duo in the 80s. And the reason I even knew about them is because they would always come up with a song that was dissing somebody that was popular on the charts. There was a song about Debbie Gibson and Rick Astley and MTV VJ Martha Quinn. He has his solo debut, Mojo Nixon. He got rid of Skid. Him and Skid had a parting of the ways. Just Mojo Nixon for this 1990 album, Otis. I think this is the apex of his career of diss tracks. I think we can all agree. I think before Big Lebowski got to it, before the Dude proclaimed the Eagles a pox upon humanity, I think a lot of us were in the same pocket. And Mojo understood that vibe. In 1990, he had a song that said simply, Don Henley must die. And a lot of us were kind of nodding, you know, he's got a point.
Well, and not to just seem gratuitous, the Eagles broke the $100 ticket mark. Then they broke the $200 ticket mark. You know, eventually they broke like the $500 concert ticket.
Well, in addition to making music, I mean, obviously they had a ton of hits, and I'm probably insulting a ton of people by just saying that, you know, the Eagles didn't exactly have a huge cachet in sort of the indie scene. And the whole idea that they were kind of smug about it, too, it did not enamor them to people like Mojo Nixon. The lines in the song, don't let them get back together. This is the whole idea about the Eagles were now, there was a parting of the ways. Don't let them get back together with Glenn Frey. Don Henley must die. Yes. And then at the end of the song, you know, he gets in a shot at Sting, too, and everybody's going, yes, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
same,
you for that.
That's
like the
club.
Trifecta. You
same
got Don
club.
Henley, Glenn Frey, and Sting all getting dissed in the same song. Mojo Nixon with Don Henley Must Die from 1990 on Sound Opinions.
He's a tortured artist, used to be in the Eagles. Now he whines like a wounded beagle.
That is Mojo Nixon with Don Henley Must Die. And to prove that Don Henley, well, maybe he doesn't need to die after all. He can take a joke. He actually got on stage with Mojo Nixon and helped him sing that song in, like, 1992 in Texas.
I'm not sure if that comes close to redeeming him for his many sins, but all right, makes me think a little bit better. Lynyrd Skynyrd. All right, Sweet Home Alabama. I think, you know, there's no way to talk about diss songs and not talk about this. One of the most famous of all time. Skynyrd's second album, 1974. I think it's also probably the most misunderstood diss track of all time. Neil Young, had written two songs that got under the skin of Ronnie Van Zant. One is lesser known, Alabama. It's not one of Neil Young's best, and he's kind of disowned that song. The other is Southern Man, which is a great song, you know, decrying Southern racism, Southern violence.
Southern man, better keep your head. Don't forget what your good book says. Southern change gonna come at last. Now your crosses are burning fast. Southern man.
But even Neil later admitted, I might have done it with too broad a brush. Mm. Let's not forget, you know, the South also gave us Faulkner and so many great traditions, right? So Southern Man comes out. It's painting this broad attack on a certain mentality, which is still with us. And Lynyrd Skynyrd fires back. I heard Mr. Young sing about her, talking about Dixie. I heard old Neil put her down. Well, I hope Neil Young will remember a Southern man don't need him around anyhow. Now, what Van Zant tried to make clear in many interviews is that he didn't want everybody to put the South in one basket. The second verse, which this is a politician that's more controversial, you know, he sings, in Birmingham, they love the governor. Mm. And he's talking about George Wallace, the right. segregationist. What everyone, many people, have missed is he sings in Birmingham, they love the governor, and that wonderful Skynyrd trio of backing vocalists go, boo, 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 right? I mean, it's a sarcastic line. And Van Zant goes on to say, you know, we did what we could do, meaning we tried to be allies to the civil rights movement. Watergate doesn't bother me. Does your conscience bother you? What's he saying there? He's talking to the North. He's saying, we've all made mistakes.
Yeah.
All of us have not been maybe activist enough. Just don't put the South down for some individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a great song. Skynyrd would sometimes perform in Neil Young t-shirts circa Two Nights the Night to make the message a little clearer. And somehow that all gets reduced to wave your Confederate flag, drive your pickup truck with the shotgun on the back. All right, one of rock's greatest songs above and beyond the dissing, Sweet Home Alabama by Lynyrd Skynyrd. Sweet Home Alabama. We don't have enough Skynyrd on this show.
I think Skynyrd's a great band. One of the most underrated bands of all time.
Fantastic band. Greg, you got another diss?
Yes, I do, Jim. We had mentioned hip-hop at the top of the segment as being the apex of this dissing movement. I mean, and with good reason. I mean, when you talk about some of the early hip-hop records, Roxanne Shanty versus UTFO and the real Roxanne, you know, those, you know, 20, 30 records where they were trading riffs and disses and insults and amazing amount of money was made at the same time for really clever insult records going back and forth.
Well, and I think we shouldn't romanticize or play light the hip-hop feud because, of course, Tupac and Biggie, I mean, nothing but tragedy came out.
Well, exactly. In the 90s, it got completely out of hand with Tupac and Biggie, absolutely. And in more recent incarnations, we've seen Jay-Z and Nas go at it, and Nas and Drake go at it, and it's you know, it's an ongoing tradition.
Kanye and the World.
In the 80s, at the, you know, when New York City hip-hop was really the center of the hip-hop world. Two of the greatest MCs from that era went at it toe-to-toe for a verbal feud that went on for a decade. So Kumo D really had a thing for LL Cool J about him. LL was ripping him off, and he was going to get back at him, and lo and behold, he did. He put out a record called How You Like Me Now in 1987, which was one of his best-selling records. A number of the songs on that record, naming LL directly, calling him out, saying, you ripped me off.
How you think it feel to see another MC get paid? Using my rap style, and I'm playing the background. Meanwhile, I ain't with that. You can't forget that. You took my style. I'm taking it back, coming back, like Return of the Jedi. Sucker MCs in the place that said I could only rock rhymes and only rock crowds, but never rock records. How you like me now?
On the cover, there's Kool Moe Dee posing with a Jeep directly behind him with its front tire on a red Kangol hat, much like the ones that LL used to wear back in the day. So the message was pretty direct and pretty pointed. LL responds with a song called Jack the Ripper, produced by Rick Rubin, who was producing a lot of his records at the time. And he did not mince words. In fact, this was the start of a decade-long series of records in which LL went after Kool Moe Dee. So he did not forgive or forget over that period of time. But it all started with Jack the Ripper, and he basically names that record How You Like Me Now. I'm getting busier. I'm double platinum. I'm watching you get dizzier. You know, he's calling him out and saying, I got you. I'm selling way more records than you are. You ripped me off. I didn't rip you off. And on it went. The verbal shots really started in earnest with this record. LL Cool J with Jack the Ripper on Sound Opinions from 1987.
Sucker punk with real hip hop is, boy. How you like me now? I'm getting busier. I'm double platinum. I'm watching you get dizzier. Check out the way I say my display, my play, my J on the back behind the cool without the NY. I love to ride the groove because the groove is smooth and makes me move, and I'll improve as it goes on.
That is LL Cool J with Jack the Ripper on Sound Opinions. And now we want to get you in this conversation. Call and leave a message on our hotline with your favorite diss track, 888-859-1800. When we come back, more of our favorite songs that hold a grudge. And later, we're going to provide a personalized playlist prescription for a listener in need. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. So